This is On Location. I'm Tim Leitner. Today we come to you from too many locations to count. Well, actually 15 different locations across the U.S. But first, On Location is produced by the NCO Communications Committee with special production assistance from Joe Mamlin and me. You can find our podcast on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcast, Breaker, iHeartRadio, and Radio Public, among others. So subscribe today on your favorite podcast service and tell all your friends. On our program today, we are celebrating NCO's premier podcast, On Location. Listen and hear the top 10 listened to On Location episodes for 2023. See how many you have heard and which ones you might want to catch up with. And for those that have heard all of the top 10, we thank you for diligently listening and get ready for a fresh program episode next week. It's going to be a great show, so stick around and we'll be right back. I'm Tim Leitner with CGI in Anchorage, Alaska, and today we're going to count down NCO On Location's top 10 episodes for this past calendar year in 2023. Some might surprise you, and some may not. Before we get started, here are some interesting facts from this year's journey. Our host and guest came from 15 different locations: Maryland, Alaska, Ohio, Arizona, North Dakota, Virginia, California, Illinois, Louisiana, Colorado, New York, Wisconsin, North Dakota, Oklahoma, and Oregon. 78% of our On Location listeners discovered us in 2023. 9% of our listeners started listening with Charting a Course for Economic Mobility, Episode 1. Our listeners grew by 5% this year, streams by 8%, followers by 68%, and minutes of created content by 13%. 92% of you joined us for the first time this year. We also hit 10,000 all-time plays. Enough with the metrics, let's count down. Starting at number 10 of the countdown is Moving Forward, a journey into the story of the child support program with Vernon Drew and Tim Leitner hosting.
Well, first of all, Tim, thanks for inviting me to join you this afternoon. It's a real honor to be included in anything NCO has to do, and especially if it has something to do with you. So yeah, I'm Vernon Drew. I hail from Walterboro, South Carolina. Let's just put that to rest. So I grew up in South Carolina, went to college in South Carolina, and started my career as a in those days called AFDC. It was a program that the economic program for children and families. And I worked in Walterboro for a couple of years doing that work. And so that's how my career started.
You know, Vernon, you had recently spoken at NCO Web Talk in December of last year about a journey through the history of the child support program. And I know today you're going to further that conversation and talk to us about how the program came about, including the milestones and how they impacted and influenced the program. So let's start with just a short little recap. Can you remind us when the 40 child support program was created and why was it created?
Well, the program actually began in July of 1975. But it was built upon things that had happened across the country since the 1950s. In 1972, the Congress and many states became increasingly concerned about the number of families that were having to rely upon the AFDC program for economic security. And they alarmed about the numbers of children and families, but also the amount of money that was being spent on that program. And so, led by Russell Long, who was a senator from Louisiana, Robbie Ingres will be happy I said that, the Senate Finance Committee really started investigating ways that they could, and this is a very negative thing, but it was very negatively said back then, make men pay for their children and collect child support as a debt recovery for the AFDC program. And I'll come back to that later. It's something I think we have to keep in mind, and something that we've really struggled as a program all these years to turn around our debt collection mentality to a family service mentality, which, you know, is great and is happening now. So the program started in 1975, but like I said, it was built upon some models that already existed. Specifically, a lot of people that came to Washington to start the child support program were from California district attorney's offices. They were very influenced by the Michigan Friend of the Court and prosecutor's office in Michigan, the Pennsylvania Domestic Relations Court, just to name three specific states. And there were bits and pieces of other programs.
Up next is number 9 of the countdown, with Anne Marie Ruskin, a career well served with none other than Anne Marie, and hosts Diane Potts, Jim Fleming, Tim Leitner, and Brandy Gallebo.
Hi, everyone. My name is Brandy Gallebo. I'm coming to you from Franklin County Child Support in Columbus, Ohio. Diane?
Hi, everyone. So I'm the child support lead for CGI Technologies and Solutions, and I had the privilege and the honor of being the president of ENSIA when Anne Marie became our executive director. I am talking here from Scottsdale, Arizona. On to my friend Jim.
I'm Jim Fleming, the director of the Child Support Program for North Dakota, coming to you from North Bismarck. And I have the honor of serving as the current president of the National Child Support Enforcement Association.
The first thing I learned was the child support program is extremely confusing, very complicated. And just when you think you've experienced and understand it, there's something else turns up. And it's very hard to grasp all the factors that, you know, are involved in the child support program. One thing that really helped me, though, understand more than just the enforcement part was the bubble chart, the infamous bubble chart. And when I joined ENSIA in 2010, that was a big thing. Everyone talked about the bubble chart. It was a very good depiction of what the child support program touches upon. It's not just payments and supports. You know, it strengthens families. It raises children out of poverty. And it really was very helpful in understanding, you know, workforce development and fatherhood and parenthood engagement, medical support. It was very helpful. And so that's the one thing that I really was most surprised at, but very encouraged by too, because it just showed the importance of the program and how far reaching it was and how important it was to help families and children.
Number 8 comes to you with The Data Doesn't Lie, Thoughts and Implications from the National Child Support Market Research Survey, with Barbara Lucina and David Kilgore. Emily Jernigan hosts.
Thank you both for joining us today. David, would you like to tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Thank you, Emily. It's a pleasure to be here with you all today. I've been the director of California for about 5 years now and have enjoyed every moment out of it. It's challenging and it's exciting, but I'm particularly interested in looking at and exploring how the child support program is going to look in the future. And I think that's where a lot of my interest and my passion goes when it relates to this concept of public relations and how people are viewing us. So that's why this topic is passionate to me, and I've enjoyed working with Barbara and exploring that further.
Ooh, thank you, David. And I'll ask Barbara, would you please tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Thank you, Emily. Good afternoon, everyone. I would like to just share a couple of things in addition to the current role that I have here in Virginia, where I've been the director for a little over 3 years now. I am coming up on 31 total years in the child support program. And the first 18 of that was in a different state, and then 10 years with the federal office, and then these last three in Virginia. And what I have always used as my frame of career path is the innovation of the program. So I've always been very involved in grant projects. I've always been very involved in policy development. And much of that has been driven by child support professionals. This gives us an opportunity, this being the National Market Research Survey, gives us an opportunity to use more of the customer's voice in both policy development and in the design and implementation of grant projects.
So this survey, it was really born out of an effort between the joint NCIA-NCCSD and OCSE Joint Public Relations Committee. And the results from the Federal Digital Marketing Grant showed that people were interested in the child support program, but they did not necessarily open up a case. So we really wanted to look further into the reasons why people don't open up a child support case nationally in our program. So a subcommittee comprised of Bruce Erickson of Minnesota, Amy Lindholm from Michigan, and California's Nicole Dirac worked with the California Program Innovation Team to develop the survey, which was vetted by the Joint Public Relations Committee and OCSE before its release. We then were fortunate enough to have Michigan offer funds to retain a market research vendor who conducted the survey along with a formal focus group with 11 core states. That included California, Kansas, Indiana, Illinois, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, Texas, Utah, Vermont, and of course, Virginia. The core states survey was completed in December of 2022, and the results are about to be released. The general survey itself is still running and will conclude on April 30th of 2023. Michigan's vendor will assist in evaluating that data as well for release. And we're expecting all of this to start to finalize with our reports come the NCIA Leadership Symposium later this year and the NCCSD conference that will be held in Oregon.
Next is number 7. Robbie Andrus shares her stories in the child support program with her friend and colleague, Robbie Andrus, and hosted by Mary Ellen Keeley.
Today, we're pleased to have a guest who is no stranger to most of you in the child support community, has been a frequent guest of the NCIA podcast. She is the one and only Robbie Andrus. She has worn lots of hats, but is currently a senior consultant with Conduit and their child support services division. I've had the pleasure of working with her on the NCIA Web Talks committee and bumping into her in workshops at NCIA conferences. I'm Mary Ellen Keeley with Virginia Child Support in Charlottesville, Virginia. Today, we're going to chat with her about her career that has spanned 30 plus years and maybe learn a little bit for ourselves about how to navigate our own child support careers. Robbie, will you please introduce yourself?
Sure. Thank you, Mary Ellen. I'm a retired Louisiana state employee. I worked for 38 years for the state of Louisiana, the last 19 of that being in the child support program. I was the 4D director for Louisiana from 2004 until I retired in 2011. I moved from Baton Rouge, which is where I worked the whole time that I was in the final years of my child support work. I moved to Leesville, which is a small town in central Louisiana. This is where I grew up, and I'm enjoying spending a lot of time with my old friends and my classmates from the years past. As a matter of fact, I've been on the phone with several of them just this morning. I'm working for Conduit, and I'm able to work virtually from home, but I also do some traveling for this company. I support the Child Support Services Division of Conduit. I like this for many reasons, but one of the best reasons that I like it is because it keeps me connected with the child support program. Well, I worked for the first few years of my state career, I worked in the public assistance programs. And in the public assistance programs, I was in everything from what at that time was called AFDC and food stamps to all the Medicaid programs. At some point or another during those years, I got involved in each of those programs. And I kept thinking in there that surely there was something else we could do and some better way to help families than what we were doing just by giving them some kind of eligibility certification. So when the 4D program had come in during the late 70s, I got interested in that and seeing what we were doing in Louisiana. And as a matter of fact, I was one of the first ones to interview an absent parent who was then picked up by child support enforcement, and an order was entered for child support for him. So I thought that was pretty unique and interesting. When I had an opportunity then to switch over from public assistance to the part of the agency that handled child support enforcement, I took that opportunity. When I went there, to me, that was just a transformation, I guess you could say, in my career. I went there and I thought to myself, I have now found a home. And of course, these years later, it's still a home to me.
And for number 6 on the top 10 belongs to Enhancing Professional Development with Active Listening. Pat O'Donnell and Emily Jernigan host Mary Lawrence Jones.
Each and every day, you provide exemplary services to millions of families that need our assistance. Through your continued efforts to improve service delivery and customer experiences, you've changed the lives of many. On behalf of all of those that you positively impact, thank you for your expertise and dedication to the child support program. Now, a little bit about my career journey. I recently retired with more than 36 years of public service working for the State of California Franchise Tax Board, the State Department of Child Support Services, and most recently, the County of Sacramento Department of Child Support Services. During my journey, I started as a customer service representative and moved into training, giving mandatory supervisory and all staff training, where after about 4 years, I moved into the program side of the operations as a supervisor, section manager, and at that time, I was introduced to the child support program. In addition to leading child support, I also had other non-tax debt programs such as court order debt and DMV, just to name a few. In 2014, I joined the State Department of Child Support Services as an executive, becoming a regional administrator, where at that time, I provided oversight to 5 of the largest child support agencies in the state. After 26 years with the state, I retired and I moved to the County of Sacramento DCSS as an assistant director, where I stayed for 8 years and just recently retired, hence giving me the 36 years of public service. During my time at Sacramento County, I led both the operations and administrative divisions, which included, for example, enforcement, case initiation, call centers, program performance analysis, budget contracts, etc. You know, I always tell people that although the work was very challenging at times, and sometimes it seemed insurmountable, it's not about the complexity of the work that I will always remember as I transition into retirement, but it's about the wonderful relationships that I've met along the way.
Can you help us understand what is active listening and why is it important in all facets of our lives?
Active listening is the ability to completely focus on the speaker, understand their message, comprehend the information, and respond to that individual. So it's unlike passive listening, which is the act of simply hearing the speaker and retaining their message. It really focuses on making that interpersonal connection, building that skill that allows you to engage with the person and to recall specific details without needing to repeat information. Active listeners use verbal and also nonverbal techniques to show and keep their attention on the speaker. This not only supports your ability to focus, but it also helps to ensure the speaker that they are focused and that they're engaged, instead of mentally rehearsing and waiting on a response, which many times many of us do.
Halfway in the middle now for number 5, On Location with the Ohio No Kidding Program's Peer Educators, with Jasmine, Kyle, and Chevy, and hosted by Tim Leitner and Michael Hayes.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for asking. Glad to be here. So I work in the Division of Program Innovation in the Federal Office of Child Support Enforcement, and we are the division that is responsible for leading demonstration projects and providing training and technical assistance to states and tribal child support agencies on parenting time and domestic violence and education and outreach, which is one of the things that our No Kidding program does. Is it's about education and outreach about the child support program. So glad to be here with you, and even more excited to have our three peer educators.
My name is Kyle. I have a 7-month-old child named Kaysen, and I work for Perry County.
Hi, my name is Chevy Barnes. I'm 18 years old, and I have a 16-month-old daughter named Nova, and I work in Gallia County.
Hi, I'm Jasmine. I have a 2-year-old child. Her name is London, and I'm a mentor through the NKO program. The No Kidding Ohio program is to educate the youth about the rights, responsibilities, and the realities of teen parenting so that they can make informed decisions on issues related to parenting and relationships and being committed while building life and leadership skills among the teen parents who serve as peer educators as well as myself.
So you can tell that they get a chance to present a lot, can't you, Tim? That very professional approach, you know, and the No Kidding Project is part of this bigger funding that the Federal Office of Child Support Enforcement has done with a number of states and tribal child support agencies across the country, really to think about child support in a new way, to conduct education outreach to youth and young adults so that they can make informed decisions about establishing paternity or opening a child support case and thinking about what it means to be financially responsible. And so No Kidding is this model where we have peer educators who are trained then to go out into classrooms and community settings to do outreach and engagement. And you know, who better to talk about responsible parenting than other young parents, right, who can model what that looks like. And so one of the key elements of the Responsible Parenting Grants is really to focus on youth voice, right? And we want to hear from the young parents, teens, and young adults who really kind of link this work.
Number 4 in the countdown belongs to the 2023 NCIA Policy Forum Preview. This episode welcomed Margot Bean and Connie Chesnick, joined by hosts Pat O'Donnell and Tim Leitner.
We're so pleased to have in the virtual on-location studio our co-hosts for the 2023 NCIA Policy Forum. These should be no strangers to most of you, Margot Bean and Connie Chesnick. Margot and Connie, I'd like to ask each of you to introduce yourselves, let us know where you're from, and maybe something fun about you. So Margot, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, hi, I'm Margot Bean. I have worked with Deloitte Consulting for a little over 13 and a half years after a long child support career leading state and federal child support programs. I live in Niskayuna, New York, and a fun fact is that I live in the house that I grew up in.
And hi, I'm Connie Chesnick. I am the administrator of the Division of Family and Economic Security in the Wisconsin Department of Children and Families. I have been in child support for many years, and a fun fact, I guess, about me right now is after waiting a very long time, I am about to become a grandmother. And so when I'm not planning policy forums, I'm planning baby showers. So.
That is awesome. Congratulations, Connie.
Thanks.
So how did you get connected and asked to represent and be the planning committee for the policy forum? In other words, how did you get this gig?
So last year for the 2022 Policy Forum, we were asked by then NCIA President Lori Bankston if we would co-chair the Policy Forum. And Margot and I were both members, are still both members of the NCIA Board of Directors. We were a little bit intimidated by the request because we were filling big shoes. Shanine Moore and Aaron Frisch had done a wonderful job the previous year and set the bar really high. The forum that focused on diversity, equity, and inclusion.
And we found that during our planning last year that we worked really quite well together and we enjoyed it. I think the policy forum turned out really well. The committee members that we had were phenomenal and the plenaries were impactful last year. So this year, President Jim Fleming must have decided not to split us up, not to split up this winning team because he asked us to co-chair again.
Well, absolutely. I concur. This is such a winning team and such a great leadership role for y'all. So I've got to ask, NCIA has two conferences each year, the Policy Forum and the Leadership Symposium. And of course, ERICSA and WCSIC have their professional conferences, and some states, tribes, counties have others. What are the benefits of attending the NCIA 2023 Policy Forum?
So they're obviously, both the Policy Forum and Leadership Symposium are great networking opportunities, but they are there are differences. The Policy Forum is really an opportunity for people to come together to hear what's new, what innovations are taking place, what legislation is being contemplated, things that are happening at the federal, state, and local levels. Leadership Symposium is a professional development opportunity for people to come together to share tips and ideas on management and operations, basically an opportunity to nurture future leaders in the child support program. I think people attending this year's Policy Forum will see us building on the policy forums from the last couple of years, continuing to incorporate principles of diversity, equity, and inclusion, and focusing on the changes and the cultural evolution that we're seeing in the child support program. Margo?
Yeah, thank you. So I was a child support director, 4D director in both Guam and New York State. And then, of course, I was the federal commissioner. And I found that the policy forum, as Connie said, was the premier conference to go to have those intense policy discussions, because it's a policy focus. And there are, in the plenary sessions coming up, some things that states have done programmatically, but it's in the context of the policy and what the policy is, how the policy changes, those kinds of things. The final thing is that the policy forum as a 4D director particularly was where most of the 4D directors would come to. More would come to that than any other conference across the country. And it was a great place to all get together to talk about policy.
Nearing the top, we have episode number 3, Taking a Deeper Dive, a conversation about the IRS position on unauthorized disclosure. Tim Leitner hosted Lisa Skinnendorf and Kate Cooper Richardson for this discussion. Fun fact, this episode was streamed 331% more than our average episode. You know, Lisa, you've been with us on location a number of times, and we're glad to have you back. And Kate, we're so glad to have you make your first appearance, and for sure, not your last. Thank you both for being here. So let me ask each of you to tell our listeners a little bit about who you are, where you're from. Just share a little bit about yourselves.
Sure. Thank you, Tim. My background in child support started when I was still with my tribal nation, and we received our startup two-year planning grant back in 2005. I was fortunate at that time to connect to the two different tribal associations. There's a Directors Association as well as the Training Association. And out of those, staff from OCSC and IRS Office of Safeguards had attended and encouraged the tribes to take the message forward and seek parity, direct access for the tribes to the federal tax offset program, because they knew back then that the tribes had access to FTI at some level through their counterpart systems and things that they were sharing with the states. And at the time, the IRS had said, you know, we're aware this is happening, but findings will be held in abeyance until such time that legislative action is taken. Kate?
Yeah, hi. I am Kate Cooper Richardson, as Tim said, and I am the director of the Oregon Child Support Program. But I am also this year the president of the National Council of Child Support Directors, NCCSD. And so this issue landed in my lap as president this year. I've been with the program here in Oregon for about 13 years. I'm a lawyer by training and have been in other leadership positions across Oregon state government. And of course, I love child support best of all. But I will say that this issue is testing my patience very much with the IRS in it. I think that probably the IRS can test anybody's patience, but still. So I've come to this issue over the last few years, actually, because in this director position, my senator here, Senator Ron Wyden in Oregon, happens to be the chair of the Senate Finance Committee, which is the Child Support Committee of Jurisdiction in the Senate. So I have been a little closer to some of these issues over the last several years. But now here we are.
And I probably should have added a little more that since that time, roughly around 2010, NTCSA has taken this charge forward and really trying to gain parity for the tribes directly on the offset program. And so through all these years since then, we've had numerous visits with staff on the Hill and different offices, of course, the Federal Office of Child Support Enforcement. Some of us have hounded our state counterparts relentlessly at different meetings, asking for various letters of support for the tribal issue, as well as the associations across the country to back this. And frankly, it's just been nothing but absolute 100% support for the tribes to have access to the offset program. So we thought we were in great, you know, in great shape around all of this. And then roughly around 2015 to 17, and their conversations started happening more so with Senate Finance and different teams there. And gradually, now Chairman Wyden was actually ranking member at the time. So I had given my dear friend Kate a call one day and said, listen, you know, would you be willing on behalf of Oregon to reach out to your senator as he's ranking member? And could this be something that we do collaboratively and jointly to try to get this bill passed, this legislative fix for the tribes to have access? Of course, Kate said yes, said absolutely. And yeah, I don't know that you're a sucker. I think we all ended up being a sucker. Not about the tribal piece, but really around the contractor piece. So one of the things that came to light in all these conversations was the fact that even if the tribes got access, they would struggle with the same issue that the states currently have around contractor access and what that means. And there's differing definitions to that term. But at the time, we thought, okay, we'll fix the contractor piece and include it in this bill, because to us at the time, it seemed a pretty simple fix. We could take care of both of these issues for both the tribal program and the state program. Conversations ensued. We collaborated with NCCSD, NCIA, Kate attached to her program in Oregon, the staff on the Hill attached to Senate Finance. And voila, we had the Tribal Child Support Enforcement Act, which was introduced. The initial version, I believe, was in 2020, and then it went on unanimous consent in the last session. And we have yet to see it move.
Well, not yet, not this session yet. But that is the famous bill, S-534. It's the number you'll hear out there for the Tribal Child Support Enforcement Act, S-534. And I'd like to echo what Lisa said. Really, it did seem like not that heavy of a lift. I mean, there's been that long-term universal support, really, for tribal access. And NCCSD has been there, individual state programs, and everyone. Everyone's been on board. So this issue with contractors' access just creeped in. But it did seem like an easy or, you know, a relatively simple win because, of course, it applies to all of us. And there, it went forward very simply as well. By unanimous consent, the Senate had it, and then boom, there it was. There's a solution. Hooray! And then nothing happened in the House. Congress adjourned, and here we are still thinking, well, it'll come around again. But then here comes February. And in February, I think the official date is February 16th or so, the Office of Safeguards with the IRS sent out its memo, its alert memo. We kind of heard some rumblings this was coming, but there came a security and privacy alert on February 16th, just saying that, quote, effective October 1st, 2023, the Office of Safeguards will no longer hold in abeyance the finding of unauthorized disclosure of FTI to the agency's contractors. That finding that's been there for many states for years and years and years, and it's been held in abeyance for years, awaiting a solution. And there was that solution, our Tribal Child Support Enforcement Bill. But the IRS, and they said it in the memo, we've been under pressure. We're not going to hold this in abeyance anymore. And boom, a bomb was dropped on all of us. The IRS memo did point to a solution, that long-term solution. Hello, there is a bill out there, S-534. But as you know, any solution that takes an act of Congress, well, it takes an act of Congress. So then with the date of October 1st for all those findings that are not currently critical findings for all the states that have them, and that is most of them, nearly all, maybe all but about six of the states and territories have some version of this kind of finding as a significant finding held in abeyance. But the IRS indicated that they would also make that finding a critical one. Well, a significant finding and a critical finding are very different, even though the findings were issued as significant findings, it's a critical finding. So the message that this memo gave to states or state programs was, you're going to be getting a warning letter about a critical finding in October. And I don't know about any other state, but in my state, an IRS critical finding, that's a big deal. So that's where states are finding themselves right now, with a solution, but a solution that takes a lot of work. And maybe it's not finding as favorable a reception in Congress as it might have in the past, although I think the Senate is probably still there, but we have a different House than we did before. So we've got a solution, but in the meantime, we've got a deadline, and that's where we're sitting right now.
Almost to the peak with episode number 2 is a conversation on the OCSE Safe Access for Victims Economic Security, or SAVES, demonstration grant, where Mary Ellen Keeley and Brendy Gabo host Taylor Ash, Suzanne Dolan, and Georgina Tharp.
Hi all, my name is Taylor Ash. I'm a policy program consultant within the Division of Child Support Enforcement for the state of Virginia, although I'm currently talking to you from a suburb of Raleigh, North Carolina. I live in Cary, we're a distributed team. I actually got my start on this team, specifically in the Grants and Initiatives team. So this is really getting my my introduction into both the grants world and the legislative world. That's really where my focus is, very specifically with this team. And that's where I got my start here in child support. And I would say if there was anything that got me what got me interested in child support very specifically was the innovative work that Virginia was really looking to do, in the sense that they were really trying to move child support and pivot away from this, sort of collections only space to really being more of a whole family support system. And so that was what drew me to make the world and jump into child support. So yeah, that's me in a nutshell. I'm going to go ahead and pass it on over to Suzanne.
Hi everyone, Suzanne Dolan. I am so excited to be on this today. I am serving currently as the New York SAVES Project Director, and I am a mom of two teenagers from upstate New York. My background is really as an attorney. I was in private practice for about 5 years before really coming over to the state to be a state attorney. My background, at least in the private sector, was I had some exposure to the Capital District Women's Bar Association, a local bar association that had an affiliation with a non-for-profit entity known as the Legal Project, which advocates for those who have traditionally had difficulty obtaining civil legal assistance. And as part of that, they work with domestic violence survivors. So that really was my exposure to this area.
Hi everyone, Gina Tharp here from Oklahoma. I am a program supervisor in our Center for Professional Development. I have worked in government in the state of Oklahoma for 22 years. 22, what seems like has gone by really quick years, but long at the same time. 20 of those years have been with child support services, working in various capacities, starting out as a caseworker in paternity and establishment, working my way up to a program field rep / trainer at our state office level, holding several management positions since that time. I took a little 2-year break from child support and worked at our Attorney General's office in victim services. So I have not only worked in child support, but also had the opportunity to work in domestic violence services as well throughout my career.
Excellent. Thank you all for those introductions. It's really neat to hear what brings people to child support, what interests people working in the grants field. So before we get too far into our conversation today, I wanted to share some information about the grant that specifically we are here to talk about today. So I'm going to read a little blurb straight from the feds. In September 2022, OCSE awarded the SAVES demonstration to child support programs in 12 states and one tribe to support domestic violence survivors who need child support services but are unable to access them. OCSE also awarded a cooperative agreement to Colorado to the SAVES Center. Over the five-year project period, recipients will implement comprehensive domestic violence safety policies, procedures, and outreach activities to enhance the safety for survivors of domestic violence in the child support program and increase access to the child support and parenting time services for parents not currently receiving child support due to safety concerns.
So now that we've heard some things that you're all excited about and some concerns, as well as your great partner agencies, how do you think you're going to plan to implement this in your program office?
And at the very top, with the most listened to podcast of 2023, garnering 148 listens, is Rounding Out and Sorting Out, An Employer-Focused Conversation, Part 1. Pat O'Donnell and Tim Leitner hosted Corey Flores and Sherry Grigsby. This was the first in a four-part series on employer-focused podcasts.
This series came about because Tim and myself have been brainstorming over the last year or so around how to provide the most educational information we possibly can to the employer community. And for me personally, this really came into focus when I participated in the employer symposium that was held last July in Boston. And after that, Tim and I said, this is really an important event. And so we engaged our speakers today to assist us in identifying what we felt were the most important initial topics to raise to employers' attention and perhaps help educate the larger community. So joining us today to help round out and sort out a little bit more about the employer roles within the child support program are Corey Flores with ADP and Sherry Grigsby with the Federal Office of Child Support. So Sherry and Corey, I'm going to ask each of you to introduce yourselves. Tell us a little bit more about who you are and what you do and why this topic is so important. So Corey, I'll ask you to lead us off.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks, Tim. So as you mentioned, my name is Corey Flores. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for ADP, and I'm also the chair of the American Payroll Association's Government Relations Task Force, focused on child support and other garnishments, as well as a member of NCIA. And really, since employers pay such a large volume of the child support across the United States, employers really appreciate the collaboration and partnership with the child support community, and so we're just excited to be able to share such a great relationship.
Thank you, Corey. Sherry?
Hi, Corey and Pat. Thanks so much for inviting me to participate in this podcast. I'm Sherry Grigsby, and I am the Deputy Director of the Division of Federal Systems with the Federal Office of Child Support Enforcement, or OCSE for short. I've been in the child support program for 29 years, starting my career in the state of Virginia as a caseworker. In my current position, one of my areas of responsibility is to oversee our employer services line of business, and we focus on working with employers and child support agencies to improve communication. We want to develop efficient and streamlined processes that will result in families receiving support timely. And this topic is so important because employers are one of the key child support program partners, and collections attributed to the employers withholding support makes up a majority of the total amount collected annually. That's why it's important for us to all work together to identify opportunities to implement processes and to make things easier on both child support agencies and our employer partners.
Great. Thanks, Sherry. Hey, Sherry, I've got to ask. So can you start us out by giving us a brief history of the child support program in the United States? When did it begin? And whose lives does it touch?
Sure, Tim. So the child support program was established in 1975, and it was originally set up to reimburse benefits paid by the government's welfare programs. The program has sure evolved since then, and today it's really more of a family support program providing significant income for families. And our program touches the lives of approximately 13.2 million children nationwide, which is about 1 in 5 children. And I could go on and on about the history of the program and give you a lot more details, but I know we have a short time for the podcast. If you'd like more information about the child support program, our website is fantastic and it's a wonderful resource.
And Tim, if I could just add, so many of us are touched by the child support program, whether it's as an employer or a payroll professional, we're actually processing the orders that we receive, or it's potentially the fact that you're receiving child support, you know someone who is receiving child support. And so it really enters into our lives in a variety of different ways. And so the program really is vast, and I think we're all touched by it in some ways, even if it's, you know, outside in our personal lives. So we all have vested interest in the success of the program.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we want to thank all our guests and hosts, listeners and followers from 2023, not just for our top 10, but all those that offered their time to engage around the virtual table at the On Location studio. It has been an amazing year, and we are looking forward to more success in 2024. Bringing you child support-related podcasts that benefit our NCM membership and community. Happy New Year, and stay tuned to next week's NCM On Location podcast. On Location is available on iTunes, Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and anywhere you get your podcasts. We have a lot of great episodes on the way, so be sure to subscribe and listen to all of our previous episodes as well. We also appreciate your ratings, your feedback, your comments, and your suggestions. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, please reach out to us on the contact link on our website. On Location is a production of the NCA Communications Committee with special production assistance from Joe Mamlin and me. Thanks again for joining me. I'm Tim Leitner, and this has been On Location.